Pred Film Radio. Sarajevo Film Festival, Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Prepi Radio, this is Chiara Nicoletti from the 20th Sarajevo Film Festival, in particular the 8th edition of the Sarajevo Talent. And today, the film critics of the Sarajevo Talents had the pleasure of meeting Norwegian director Hans-Petter Moland to discuss his latest work, In Order of Disappearance.
Hello, I'm Juana Guerra, and I would like to return a little bit on the discussion of how you constructed the characters, because so far the discussion went on about the male characters, but I'm curious on how you perceive your female characters. More precisely, I think somehow they feel a bit accessory, because you put up hard work on deconstructing some stereotypes of male characters, and it's clearly the film is driven by them. But you also have moments when you try to put a greater emphasis on the women, like on the Count's wife that he talks about before dying, or the main character's a brother's wife that spits on the, his husband's grave. So I was curious, how did you thought about those characters, if they were important to your story, or did you on purpose let them on a second plan and try to make a gangster movie deconstructing only the male stereotypes?
This is a story populated by a lot of very stupid men. And I think my comment on the women in this story is that they all try to get out of the story as quickly as they possibly can. And this is intentional. I'm not just being facetious. They are only peripheral characters in these male point of view. As I think women very often are in a male-dominated gangster environment or criminal, because we all know violence and wars and physical brutality and bullying is predominantly a male environment. So I think I spend a lot of time actually with Birgitte, who plays the Count's wife, talking about the mechanisms in their relationship. Because I think, for me, she made one big mistake in her life to be seduced by money, by his power or whatever, you know, 10 years ago or 12 years ago. And it's a price she paid ever since. So everything that she's doing is trying to get away from that life. And I think that's the source of the antagonism, you know, between them. She knows him well. She knows to play him like a piano. But she also is fighting for this child to have a chance to get a life which is not dominated by the stupid father. This for me is very real, so everything about her and even his, you know, comments about her hipster mittens, etc., is she antagonizes him also by having said, "I am different from what I used to be when I was with you." This is, I think, like an outside view on that world. She no longer subscribes to any of the things in that world, but she has to have contact with him. So, but whenever she enters the story, she is like the view of the normal people. You know, the same with Stellan's wife. I think their relationship is dead. They just didn't know it before this crisis happened. And why it's dead, I don't think it's important for the story. I think it's important that it is dead. And it's important that it falls apart because it cannot withstand the stress of a big crisis like this. So when she leaves because there's nothing to say, you know. In case of the wife of Stellan's brother, I don't know if you have this. You know, in Norway there are a lot of people who get wives from, they're called mail order brides. You know, they're from Thailand or Russia or. And she's the cliché, you know. The only thing is not cliché is that he got more than he bargained for, you know. He wanted a nice little petite oriental wife, and instead he got somebody who is much tougher than him and who doesn't accept his dominance. So when, and this is just my fantasy, but it's not terribly important to the story, but when you consider where they are living, if she came from Thailand or from actually Vietnam, she speaks Vietnamese, and she arrives to this place, I think there must have been something not communicated in the advertisement about, you know, he probably said, oh, I have a big house, I lots of money, but he failed to say, and I live at the end of the world, you know. So she's, you know, this, she's parked in as far away from Vietnam as possible. So this is why I think when he decides to go back into criminal, this is why she spits on his grave. You know?
Hi, my name is Tara. I would like to ask Mr. Hans-Peter Mohn, your story is a dark comedy and a dark story. Can you elaborate a bit on the contrast between the dark story and the dark comedy and the darkness of your camera work?
I think it's, I don't know how, if it, I mean, there's a lot of whiteness in this film, but it's, of course, it's not embellished. And it's, I try to create an environment which is void of noise, you know. Everything that is not important, that doesn't belong there, it was taken away. So, in many ways, it's a stylized environment. You know, there is no disturbances. For instance, when we enter Oslo, this every time we drive into the city, it's not the real Oslo. I have moved the road to the middle of the Oslo fjord so that it's more of a graphic presentation of Oslo. Like, here is the real mountains and here is the city, you know. And instead of having lots of suburbia and lots of, you know, noise in between, it's been cleaned up, if you will, to make a point, about... it's not an important story about Oslo, it's more about the capital of the Arctic or, you know, something like this. But I don't deliberately make the story dark in terms of the camera work. It's I'm a great believer in form following function. So, for instance, there's not a lot of very tight close-ups in the film because... all these great characters have a physicality, so you have to allow their physique to be shown. It means that it's not there's not a lot of beauty shots of macho men or tough guys and etc. It's human beings with their own physique, you know. So, for instance, just as an example, when Goran and Miki are outside the car talking about, you know, throwing snowballs, I wanted this to be, a realistic moment, like two adults outside of a school. They are about to kidnap a child, you know. And they get distracted. They are like children, you know. Because I think this is sort of the subtext of the film is to, you know, what can a benign society like Norway, which believes in the good of mankind and are not very good at fighting organized crime, etc. How do they meet tough, you know, organized criminals like this? Well, they're not very successful. The only thing they can do is by showing an alternative lifestyle, like having pension, organized work hours, you know. These guys work really hard, you know, doesn't even have time to go to the dentist, you know. So gradually Norway and some of the benefits of a civilized life starts to disturb their lives, you know. It starts to break up the hierarchy of the criminal, you know, this lifestyle. It's not a real answer to your question, but I think I don't see it as dark, I see it more as realistic or naturalistic.
You can listen to the full panel session on the Extra Channel. And this is Chiara Nicoletti from the 20th Sarajevo Film Festival for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.